meeting of the Board of Education to order at 6:30. Is there anyone that wishes to address the board concerning items discussed in closed session? Seeing none, we'll adjourn to closed session where we deal with expulsion of student and readmittance of students, public employee discipline, dismissal, release, transfer, appointment, conference with labor negotiators concerning CSEA and TAWC. Call this meeting of the Board of Education back to order. It's 7:02 p.m. We will have, please rise for an invocation. Is there anyone in the public that wishes to offer the invocation? Okay, seeing none. Eileen Moreno Jimenez will offer a thought, and then we'll have a flag salute led by Mr. Cox.
This is a thought from the Dalai Lama. The moment you think only of yourself, the focus of your whole mind narrows. And because of this narrow focus, uncomfortable things can appear huge and bring you fear and discomfort and a sense of feeling overwhelmed by misery. The moment you think of others with a sense of caring, however, your mind widens within that wider angle. Your own problems appear to be of no significance, and this makes a big difference. The Dalai Lama.
Join me with flags, please. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please. Here.
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 In closed session, we did take action. It was moved by Mrs. Polis and seconded by Mrs. Morena Jimenez and approved but to expel the following pupils from the School of School District. Pupil number 181831 for possession of a dangerous object, a locking blade knife. And that pupil is expelled and will not be eligible to reply for readmission until the date set in his plan. The vote was 5-0. It was also moved by Mrs. Polis and seconded by Mrs. Miranda Jimenez that the following students have completed their term of conditions and expulsion have been approved by the Board of Education for readmission to the West Community Unified School District, student number 175975 and student number 182721, and those expulsions have been lifted. Public hearing is hereby declared open at 7:04 p.m. for the purpose of hearing public input on Tier 3 funding. Is there anyone that wishes to address the board as part of this public hearing? This public hearing is hereby declared closed at 7:05 p.m. A public hearing is hereby declared open at 7:05 p.m. for the purpose of hearing public input on the 2010-2011 budget. Is there anyone that wishes to address the board about the budget? Seeing none, the public hearing is hereby declared closed at 7:06 p.m. Board report. Okay, we have no board reports. Items from the floor. Has everyone gotten me a blue card that wanted card. Not more than 5 minutes are allotted to any one particular speaker, and no more than 20 minutes on the same subject. And so please try to respect that as you address the board. And I need my glasses or the light back on for this. I am getting old. Alex? Oh, look how about, yeah.
Excuse me, the world is not made for tall people, so just give me a second.
It's not made for short ones either.
Down. Something. Good evening, board members, Superintendent Castillo. I would first like to begin by introducing myself to the members of the audience. I'm Alex Chulacaba, principal of Holland Crest Middle School and now West Covina High School. I would like to begin by expressing my sincerest gratitude for the opportunity the superintendent and the board have extended to me. It has been a great pleasure to serve the community as principal of Holland Crest Middle School, and I am very excited to now serve the high school in the same capacity. I know that this is a great opportunity, and I plan to work my hardest to ensure that we continue to provide the best, most comprehensive educational program we can for our community. I know that recently there have been many questions and concerns over the future of our school paper, in particular the change in newspaper advisors. I would like to take this opportunity to clarify some of their concerns. I considered many factors before ultimately deciding to discuss and offer the advisor position to Ms. Lisa Maggiore. First and foremost is the fact that Ms. Maggiore has proven to be an outstanding educator and advocate for students. At Holland Crest, she served as yearbook advisor, journalism advisor, ASB director, drama advisor, and geometry teacher, all in the same year. I am proud to say that she did an outstanding job in all of these roles. This is not to imply that Mr. Moser is not equally qualified. Mr. Moser is a current journalism teacher or last year. I'm aware of his many accolades, as is evident by the number of students, staff, and community members that have sought to support him. I know he has done an outstanding job as advisor, but in the interest of fairness and equity, I felt this was the best time to make a change. Mr. Moser has served as journalism advisor for many years. I believe it is now time to allow someone else to take on this role. Ms. Maggiore is an excellent educator who works to serve the school beyond her geometry class. And so now we have an opportunity to offer the journalism advisor opportunity to someone who really wants to do it, and I feel confident will do an excellent job. I firmly believe that all stakeholders in a learning community should have opportunities to contribute beyond the classroom and contribute in leadership roles. Ms. Maggiore is qualified to take on this role. I know she will do an outstanding job. I'm further encouraged that this change will be successful because of the dedication and commitment of the students, that the students of the paper exhibit. I have been impressed by their concern over the change and the future of the paper. I know that with dedicated students and a qualified and eager journalism advisor, the paper will continue its tradition of excellence. I hope I have eased their concerns, as I know the quality and integrity of the paper will not suffer. My decision to make this move was not made in haste, and I realize that change can be very difficult. But in many ways, change is good. Change provides an opportunity for new ideas and thinking. It allows differing perspectives and points of view to contribute to the existing program. Ms. Maggiore has already begun to think outside of the box and has presented new ideas that we will be sharing with the newspaper staff at our upcoming meeting, June 30th. I earnestly hope that this has clarified some of the concerns and questions that have been brought to my attention. As I have stated many times to various stakeholders who have communicated with me via phone and email, I am committed to ensuring that all programs at West Covina High School continue to exhibit the quality they are known for, including the paper. Thank you.
Shana Woodcock. Shana Woodcock?
Yeah,
Thank you.
Good evening, school board members, students, teachers, parents, and alumni. My name is Shana Woodcock, and I've graduated from West Covina High School, class of 2007. I've come to you tonight to petition a decision that negatively affects West Covina High School's journalism program. It has come to my attention that Mr. Theodore Moser will no longer be the advisor to the student-run News Bites, a decision I find incredibly unfounded. Mr. Moser has lost his title as advisor, as told to me by the new principal of West Covina, Mr. Alex Ruvakova. I'm sorry, I butchered it. Because Ms. Maggiore, a math teacher from Holland Crest, really wanted the position. Let me clarify. A title was taken away from the man who advised the newspaper for 13 years and has a master's degree in English and given it to Ms. Maggiore on her supposed whim. It's true that Ms. Maggiore has taught a yearbook class at Holland Crest, but yearbook is a far cry from a high school newspaper printed and distributed biweekly. Mr. Moser has, over the years, become well-known throughout school for his objective and adaptable teaching methods, and it is a mistake to take best man for the job out of the position. Let me make one thing clear, and if you take anything from what I'm saying, let this be it. News Bites is a student-run newspaper. It is not a pedestal for teachers' thoughts, but how the students feel and what they think. The reason I bring this up is because it is suspect that Ms. Maggiore will replace Mr. Moser to get more control over what is printed in the newspaper. It is suspect that after responding negatively to a staff editorial on her disparaging remarks about West Covina High School and its teachers, the superintendent would have a new advisor put in place. The staff editorial is in your packets that we gave to you to look over. It is in response to the superintendent Castillo's words of, "I'm not sure if I was a student that I'd want to be in those classrooms." She made those statements back in February. It is now June, and Mr. Moser has inexplicably been removed as advisor. If these suspicious ideas prove to be true, I'd like to point out California Education Code 48907, Section A, which says pupils of public schools shall have the right to exercise freedom of speech and of the press. Also Section G, it states an employee shall not be dismissed, suspended, reassigned, etc., for refusing to infringe upon free speech. I urge the school board to look into this matter unbiasedly and reinstate Mr. Moser as the advisor to West Covina High School's News Bites. Until then, we will continue to fight as long and as publicly as necessary to get this decision overturned. Thank you.
Daniel Niblas, did I say that right?
Good evening, everyone. My name is Daniel Niblas. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I would first like to begin by declaring one of four fundamental principles in the West Covina Unified School District's expected school-wide learning results, which is seen by this district's students in every classroom every day of the school year. Under the title of Student Respect, it reads, "Become informed members of society who practice the ideals of democracy." The decision to remove Mr. Moser from his position as advisor to the student-run newspaper and to replace him with Ms. Majori will weaken the student body's ability to study this principle over the course of their high school career. Now, let me cite both of their experiences and how Mr. Moser is not only more qualified, but the best qualified of our district. Mr. Moser has been advisor to the paper for 13 years, has a master's degree in English, and has organized numerous trips for his student reporters to journalism study conferences in the University of California and Columbia University in New York. Ms. Majori has no journalistic credentials and is employed as a teacher of mathematics at Hollencrest Middle School. To her credit, she has worked as a teacher for Hollencrest Yearbook, but the principal that has hired to replace her as an advisor to the high school newspaper fails to realize there is a substantial difference between a year-long course of creating yearbook and the hectic day-to-day business of covering news at our school, community, and the world. It's highly troubling to see this position being stripped from someone for seemingly unknown reasons to somebody else who seemingly does not match his qualifications. I began as a freshman for the newspaper and working for it as a reporter until my senior year, and I've come to acquire an enriching education from Mr. Moser because of his extensive amount of knowledge and respect for the profession of journalism, its history, its fundamental relationship with democracy, and how our future will be affected by its role in society. What he offers to our school as an advisor to its newspaper has made him highly revered by students and teachers alike at our West Covina High. Why does this school board risk taking away the most qualified person who has the most experience as advisor to high school students? Are they not aware of the risk here? Those students must learn democratic values in the most efficient way possible. Mr. Moser is the best qualified to do this for them. If this decision to remove Mr. Moser from his position as advisor is in reality a formal process to have more power over what the students publish in the newspaper, let me guarantee to the school board that by doing so, they will have failed in valuing the learning requirements of how important it is to understand and uphold democratic ideals. Throughout the course of studying journalism in his classroom, I have found that Mr. Moser has absolute integrity to the journalistic principle of objectivity. His opinions on the world and our job as reporters of this school were always concise, thorough, well-researched, yet no matter what, this medium he provided for us was never at any time dictated by his idea of how the newspaper should be run. Mr. Moser, as an advisor, has given us an immense amount of support as a wise consultant on journalism. But our ability as student reporters to write and publish without interference by teachers, staff, or the administration's preferences of what should be published about anything or anybody gives us the right to proudly say this has ultimately always been a student-run newspaper and a student-centered end of art in the study of journalism. More control over the flow of information will impede on this unique experience. Thus, the only major consequence of this decision to remove Mr. Moser from his advisor role is a baseless and unfortunate disrespect towards this district's outlined principle that students must learn democratic values. If the school board allows the role of advisor to be taken away from someone who is most experienced and qualified for it and give it to someone who is unfit to replace him, they will be responsible for putting self-interest above the student body of West Covina High, putting our school in jeopardy of understanding the fundamental role democratic ideals like free speech and free press play in our society, and thus they will have inadvertently weakened our ability to grasp and value the democracy outside our school walls. Thank you.
Raymond Lee.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Raymond Lee, and I just recently graduated at West Covina High School, and it's come to my attention in the latter days of my high school that Michael Kura would not be returning the following year. At first, I was puzzled, and it didn't hit me until graduation year. If you, the school board, do not remember, I included Michael Kura in my salutatorian address because he means that much not just me, but the entire Bulldog family. In addition to character and integrity, Michael Kura brings a tremendous amount of intelligence and, most importantly, experience in his field of work. He is passionate and eager to teach students, even if it is just one class a year. He isn't just a teacher, but a mentor to all of us. On a side note, shouldn't the students attending the school right now be able to speak up about the changes we want, since we are the ones getting the education at the moment? Sure, the parents help out and are involved in the student's life. The school board does its job, but unfortunately, they are not the ones sitting in classrooms every day, listening to lectures and gaining immense knowledge on the many components of life. They are not the ones knowing what's best for the learning experience taking place in the classroom in the present. And this may sound harsh, but this is the truth from my point of view. We may seem a little young, but my peers and I are quite capable and mature enough to judge how captivating our learning environment is today. I should, along with many other fellow peers, be able to voice our opinion on what should be done at school and what changes may be needed. We can and we will give you our suggestions on what can be improved throughout the school, and our opinions should be just as credible as any other because we live the student life in school day in and day out. And I believe Michael Kura should most definitely have his contract renewed because, as stated in my salutatorian speech, he is the epitome of a bulldog. I have been fortunate enough to have him as a teacher for a year, and I have been able to see him teach the class not just the typical English literature, but he added his own style to it, and he taught us about life. I personally rarely speak to him outside of class time, but here I am speaking about the greatness of this wonderful man. There is this driving force and passion inside of me that pushes me to voice my opinion on this matter, even if I've only known him for a year. It is like the gut feeling you have when you're taking a test and you're stuck between two plausible answers, and in the end, you hope that you chose the right answer. And I most definitely know that I followed my gut feeling and I did choose the right answer in speaking tonight. I may not be the ideal student who knows Michael Kura inside and out, but I can deduct from being in his class for a year on what kind of man he is. He is a man with a big heart and much to offer still. I'm sure if you placed yourself in the student's shoes, and if you were situated in his classroom for just a few days, you would understand more clearly what Michael Kura means to us as not only a teacher, but as a companion as well. Thank you for your time and attention.
Ian Jones.
Mr. President, members of the board, staff, I'm going to talk to you about Michael Kura too, except I didn't just graduate from high school, although you probably all remember me, and I'm very sorry for that. But I graduated 7 years ago, and for an entire year, you had to put up with me, and that was the same year that I had Michael Kura. And going into it, it wasn't a very good year. I had been accepted to the Naval Academy, congressional nomination, and then the towers fell, and they changed medical waivers. And I didn't go to the Naval Academy. I went to Citrus College. I've never been more depressed in my entire life. But there is a man, my high school English teacher, Michael Kura, who mentored me through it, and in the end, everything came out okay. And with his mentorship, I went to Citrus. I didn't pay for any of my tuition because I passed his AP class. although not just his class, but it helped. I went on to Cal State LA. I got my baccalaureate degree in political science. And last month, I just graduated from law school. And the only reason I'm out here right now, because the bar is in 43 days, I really don't have the time, but this man means that much to me that I would come out here and tell you all that he has a big heart. This is a quote from Michael Kura, and I want you to hear it. And it, he said that teaching is his life. If that's not the motto of what we want teachers in our schools to have, then I don't know what is. He gets up every day, and I know he looks forward to going in and seeing those students. And if he has to teach them Chaucer or Shakespeare and read Romeo and Juliet one more time, it might be nauseating to him, but he loves his job. He teaches citizenship skills, and he's a mentor. And that's what we need in society today. You have a man who is willing, able to teach. It's one class. Okay. But the amount of lives through AVID, through the one class that he's teaching, can make an impact. And you have no idea if it's going to be some lonely kid from West Covina who got out of an appointment at the Naval Academy and ended up doing something completely different. But it was because of the mentorship of a teacher that you hired in 1968. The only job Mike Okura has ever had, teaching English at West Covina High School. I really hope that you will take a look at your decision again and understand the impact that he's had on this community. Mike Okura, his second year teaching, had a woman named Catherine Goddard. For some of you who know, that's my mother. He's had, including one of my cousins who's here today, of our family, 11 students. He impacts generations. I hope you can take these words to heart and that my trip out here tonight hasn't been in vain. Michael Kura wants to teach. Michael Kura needs to teach. Thank you.
Wendy Lau.
Good evening, board members. I'm here again this week to speak to you about Mike Okura. And before I begin, I'd like to just give kudos to the students and alumni that are here speaking on behalf of Mr. Moser and Mr. Okura. If that is not an incredible testament to the educational process that we provide here at West Covina, I don't know what is. I'm extremely proud to hear Ian Jones get up here and speak because I was his substitute teacher when I subbed for Mike Okura. And through the years, I've been able to watch him grow and develop as a human being. And some of the lessons that I've learned from him and some of the lessons that I've given to him have come from Mike Okura. And I think that's something that should not be lost tonight. If you've, as you sit here and listen to the people speak tonight, you've heard from recent alum. I'm sure there are also current students here that would like to speak on Mike's behalf. I'm an alum from 1994, which I still feel 22, but clearly I'm not. But I've received messages from all over, as I know you have as well. Phone calls and letters from Florida, from Washington, from Arizona, from all reaches and from all generations in support of Michael Okura and his passion for teaching. And I urge this board to re-look at your decision and consider Mike for reinstatement as a teacher for next year. I'm going to stop myself now because there are plenty of people here who would like to speak, and you've heard from me. I've also submitted a letter that I was that I asked to be read into the record, so I do want to make that known as well. Thank you.
Do we have that letter?
Yes,
we have the letter? Where is it?
You want it now?
Well, at some point I want it, yeah.
You can get them for
him. Robin Taylor Grout.
You want her to go get it?
Well, so we can take them with us. That'd be good.
Yeah, no, she has them.
Mm-hmm. Good evening. My name is Robin Taylor Grout, and I'm a graduate of West Covina High School, class of 1994. I'm here to speak to you regarding the decision not to renew Michael Kura's contract as the AP English teacher at West Covina High School next year. Mr. Kura is an outstanding teacher. I was in his class both my junior and senior years. And Mr. Okura, he taught us what to expect in college. He didn't tell us. That was one of the only classes that really prepared me for college. He taught me how to write a research paper. I didn't know how to do that. A lot of other teachers spoon-fed information and just kind of expected us to regurgitate it on a test. We didn't learn analytic skills or the skills we needed in college. Mr. Okura's class taught us those skills. When I got to college, it was really a rude awakening in all areas except for those areas that I learned in Mr. Okura's class, the analytic skills, writing papers. I didn't have any problem in those areas. During our junior year, he assigned us an assignment where we had to give an oral presentation and we had to consider what our career path was going to be. We had to actually research what kind of education we would need. We had to know where we wanted to be when we were 35 years old, and he made us give an oral presentation. And if we didn't know what we were talking about and we just tried to go up there and kind of wing it, he called us on it. I mean, he really wanted us to consider what our life was going to be like. Everything that he did for us and taught us was geared towards us having a good education for us to go to college and have a successful life when we left West Covina High School. So it really concerns me that West Covina High School or West Covina Unified School District is not renewing his contract for next year. And I think that we're all concerned about the best interest of the students. And it's not about us, it's about the students. And I think it's important that we place principles before personalities. And I would like to thank you for taking the time to listen to me tonight. And I also did send a letter in addressed to Ms. Shoemaker that I would like read into record. Thank you.
Tamara Cruz Herrera.
Good evening, board members. I'm also returning to speak to you about the decision not to renew Mike Okura's contract as the AP English teacher at West Covina High School next year. I want to echo the sentiments of the others that have spoken tonight and my remarks at the June 8th meeting on the decision not to renew him. You've heard from various sources about Mike's successful career as an educator. It is my understanding that the master schedule is usually available at the beginning of June each year, with only minor adjustments made over the summer. I would like to again ask the board to investigate why this year, when such a valuable resource to the West Covina Unified School District wants to continue teaching, he has not received his assignment for the upcoming school year. It may seem like a small case and one teacher, but as you've heard, that teacher has impacted many lives. And you must also consider what message this sends to the rest of the teachers teaching in this school district. He is not only a product of this school district, he has dedicated his entire professional career to making sure that this school district turns out outstanding graduates. I appreciate your time and allowing us to address you again tonight, and I look forward to hearing the results of your investigation into this matter. Thank you.
I don't have any other blue cards. Is there anyone else that wishes to address the board? Okay. Let's see. Before we go to our business session, there are two things. One is I would like to request that in our Friday packet we do have the backup from the master scheduling from West Covina High that shows why this change would have been necessary. If we could get that, that would be helpful to me. And then
as part of that, can we also have the list of the other teachers who were also not renewing for the reasons behind the master schedule?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The other thing is we received from Senator Gloria Romero, who's a senator that represents West Covina, two certificates of recognition in honor of leadership in the San Gabriel Valley, and I'd like to take this time to give them to Jessica Shoemaker. Congratulations on behalf of Senator Romero.
Thank you.
I didn't know I worked for the state senate, but apparently, at least briefly, I guess I did. We're on our business session, organizational approval of agenda and consent items. Does anyone wish to take an item off consent?
Item number eight.
Any others? Does anyone wish to add an item? Okay, is there a motion?
I'll move as amended.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Moved by Mrs. Polison, second by Mrs. Miranda Jimenez to approve the agenda and consent items as listed with the deletion of item number eight. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, that's approved 5-0. Item number five, authorization to submit 2010-2011 consolidated application.
Mrs. Valentine?
About this time of year, we ask for approval to submit the consolidated application. The application comes in two parts. In this first section that we're submitting at the end of June, it includes legal assurances. Our intent to participate in federal and state program information regarding private school participation in our area, and Title I and state compensatory education ranking. The majority of Part One is actually reporting on activity that's gone on during the 2009-2010 school year, things like attendance, and expulsion rates, the compliance of teachers to the elementary and secondary school staff, and the number of students that we have served.
Are there questions? I did have one question, if there's no one else, and that is, our next item is a single plan for student achievement. Now, are those part of this consolidated application? Because it does say in the consolidated application that we're going to apply for federal Title I funds and et cetera, and yet that is what's part of this single plan for student achievement.
Correct. Single plans are a compliance requirement. Our schools need to develop a single plan, but it is not actually part of the consolidated application.
Okay, so funding mechanisms aren't part of the consolidated application. Well, for example, I have some questions about the single plan for student achievement and the way we allocate Title I funds. And we had a discussion 2 weeks ago, and I have some more questions based on data that I was able to get from the single plan for student achievement. So my question is, if we approve this, you know, did I sign off on the single plan as student achievements as they're outlined here?
No, they're separate.
That's what I just want to make sure, because in that plan, it talks about Title I and, you know, the consolidated application part of it for state and federal funds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions? Is there a motion?
I'll move this item.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve an authorization to submit the 2010-2011 consolidated application. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's approved 5-0. Item number six, single plan for student achievement.
Okay. A few comments on the single plans. Board members, if you recall, the reconfiguration from Wesco in California came too late in terms of them being able to redo their single plan. So we will be bringing you a modified plan for each of those schools on July 13th. And these plans basically remain at the district in terms of compliance issues and reviews by the state. So I'll let Ellie talk to the process that was used in order to have these filled out.
Each year is really an ongoing process of revising single plans. Schools have been working on this since last fall. As data comes in from the state, each time that data is made available to schools, that's taken into consideration, as well as school level and district level formative assessment. Schools use that information to develop plan that they will implement in the following year. Some schools are perhaps have significant changes, others less. It really identifies the main areas that they're going to focus their program on, which is increasing student performance in the area of language arts, mathematics, improving the achievement of English learners, and then most schools identify one or maybe two other goals that they want to focus on. And then, of course, they identify the practices that they want to focus on to help improve student achievement. Usually that's in the area of supplemental materials and programs to help students who have not made adequate achievement, and of course to provide a very high quality instructional program for all students.
Okay, any questions? I know I have some, but does anyone else have any questions? On the Vine one, let's start with the Vine one. On the back under Title I, for the totals under Title I, it's $28,100. And I was wondering, how did we get to that number for Vine School? Correct.
And it's based upon the funding that students, that schools had last year. We are anticipating, but we don't know, that our federal funding will be about the same as it was previous year.
Okay, so like if I, and then if I go to Merced's, the Title I allotment on the back is $94,000.
As we presented at our last board meeting, the district has two options to fund Title I by identifying students at each school or having a cutoff based on school-wide poverty, free and reduced lunch programs. So what you see before you are numbers dependent on the number of students at each school who receive free and reduced programs.
Right.
And so
okay.
For each student that receives free and reduced programs,
mm-hmm.
The total allocation that comes to the district is divided. We also explained to you at the last board meeting that the principals as a group decided that school improvement was an appropriate program at the secondary level, Title I, more appropriate for to meet their needs at the elementary. The law and the codes require us to make a selection of how we're going to do it. Mr. Frutos presented to you a presentation about the dollars that follow the students.
Right.
And then there are separate laws that govern block grants, separate laws that govern school improvement. But Mr. Frutos, can you talk a little bit about how the money was divided?
Based on the criteria that we could either provide the money to schools or in providing it to schools, it could be given to all the K through 8 schools or schools that have a population K through 8. The amount came to, I believe, $125 and give or take 64 cents per student. That was multiplied by the eligible free and reduced or Title I eligible students at every school, and that was the basis for the allocation that started 2 years ago.
Okay. Well, yeah, and I do remember that presentation from 2 weeks ago, and that's why I was kind of surprised in looking at the numbers. The SARC isn't on page 4, but I was able to get those on the website today. But, for example, Vine, which gets $28,000, $100, has an enrollment of about 556 kids, and 47% of them are on free and reduced lunch. And so that means if you take 47% of 556, you have 261 kids that are on free and reduced lunch. And then if you put that into the 28,100, it comes out to $108 per student that follows that student at Vine School. But the other school I picked, Merced, got $94,000, and it has an enrollment of 442, and its free and reduced lunch is 68%, and that gives it an enrollment free and reduced lunch enrollment of $301, and that comes out to $313 per student at Merced. And when you look at all the schools, it comes to $273 a student at California, $289 at Cameron, $285 at Merlinda, $282 at Monta Vista, $286 at Orangewood, $109 at San Jose, and $297 at West Cove. And so that's why I was confused, because I always, and I wanted, since this money is generated by kids on free and reduced lunch, I wanted that money to follow those students to that particular school site. But when you do the math based on the numbers in the single plan, it doesn't come out that way. And that's why I was really confused in looking at the numbers and the disparities between, you know, some of the schools. I mean, between Vine, there's only 40 more kids on free and reduced lunch at Merced than there are at Vine. And yet the dollar amount is $200 different. And so that's why I'm confused on, if money's following the student, why is it not reflected in these budget numbers in the single plan for student achievement?
Trade-off between SIP funding and Title I all the way to the secondary school. So if you can look at the overall formula, the total amount of Title I or secondary is divided into those schools that would have been eligible for that. In the case of a couple of our schools that fall below the threshold,
the 50%,
for example, Vine, they are not qualified for that. In the case of the second school that doesn't qualify, which is our charter school, we had a little bit of a problem. SIP, if you will, for Vine, is easy to identify. It's a separate amount, so we can take it out and give it to the secondaries. In the case of San Jose Edison, there was nothing we could do because it's involved in the block grant. So it's actually an amount that's embedded. So there's really no way for me to take out money. I mean, I could calculate it, and we would take out their SIP funding, if you will, and distributed amongst the schools, but it would be, I'm not sure that it would be legal, because when their SIP funding was block granted, it was actually included as a full amount that for them totals about $400,000. So you see a discrepancy in Vine and San Jose Edison, because the way the state funds them is very different. There's a lot I can do with Vine to distribute their SIP funding at the secondary level, which we did. There is very little we can do, for example, with San Jose Edison, because what I would have to do is estimate what their SIP funding is, take it out, and at that point we're now violating block granting. And I'm sure they would have a lot less funding. But there's nothing I could do with that, because it is now one block amount. So Vine looks totally underfunded for two reasons. One, they don't have a block grant. And two, when the amount that was the equivalent of SIP, if you will, the school doesn't qualify for that amount because their threshold is below the poverty level at the school. So I guess if you can, to make it really simple, we have two schools that don't qualify for the SIP trade-off. One makes it because of the block grant, and I can show you that. Vine does. So
yeah, but none of these schools actually add up to the actual dollar following the student to the school.
No, it does if you include the SIP.
No, the 273. Well, the SIP is got reallocated to the upper division, upper levels, correct?
Those dollars also get reallocated to your
right.
aides, and that's why you see a difference between a school at 125 or 120 something and a school at 270 something, because the poverty level differential allows us to trade off those SIP dollars. We have two schools where that.
Yeah, that doesn't work. I understand that. But that still doesn't explain why, then, are there discrepancies between Merced, Cameron, California, Monta Vista, if the money follows the kid?
Well, I can give you a good example. For example, if you have Merced and, let's say, California, what you would have to do is grab the total amount of Title I and SIP that would be going to that school, included in the overall budget where we're doing the trade-off. You get $125.64 as the base, and the difference is the amount that they traded off, if you will, dollar for dollar. We didn't really reduce it for anybody between secondary and elementaries, and that's why it's going to be different for every school, because the eligibility is a little different for every school. And we could show that. We have a fairly large.
Well, I would like to see it. I do have some questions about lottery, but I'll talk about that when I get to the budget. But it seemed odd, based on our last conversation. If, you know, because to me, we should have our Title I money, and we have this amount of kids, and that money goes to that school for those kids. Because that, I mean, that's how the money is generated. The money is generated by the kids that are on free and reduced lunch. And so if there's disparities, that means there's kids that are on free and reduced lunch that are generating this money at that school site that aren't getting it, is not getting that money. At the same level as kids at the other school site.
Right, and it's not really that it's not at the same level. The same level is the 125-64. The difference is the combination, and I'll give you a simple example between two schools, A and B. If in one school you receive $10, five Title I and five SIP, and in another school you receive the same amount, but you can actually use it to compute a swap, if you will, between Title I and SIP at the first school, and in the other one you can't, you're actually going to end up with a small differential between the two schools, because with one you can actually grab the secondary dollars. Let's say you have, you know, X mm-hmm. number of dollars. Those go to the elementaries. The Title I dollars go to the elementaries, the SIP dollars go to the secondaries, but there are a couple of schools where you cannot do that directly. When you look at it with the total amount, it does show an equal percentage of funding for each school except two. And that's what I mean, I can leave that information with the superintendent so she can give it to the board. But the numbers are exactly the same for every school except for two schools in the proportion of funding between SIP and Title I after the base of the 125.
And that's what makes everyone unequal, is that base.
That's what makes
the percentage the same. But you said that there's a disparity because of the SIP funding.
Can I make you an example? If my school qualifies for $30,000 of SIP and this other school qualifies for $20,000, because we're all bundled now as Title I money, we're going to get a different number per student. It doesn't mean that the dollar didn't follow the child. It's a combination of SIP and Title I. But we're funding it as Title I because the secondaries got the SIP amount. Mm-hmm. It's the exact same dollar. That's what I'm saying. So what we would like to show you is when you look at the combination of SIP and Title I eligibility for each one of the schools, except for those two, it'll be exactly every dollar that they're entitled follow that child. We're just naming it Title I for the elementaries because it's a better use of the dollar, and SIP for the secondaries. But the actual eligible dollars follow the student, and that's what I believe we can show.
Okay. Does someone have any other questions about the single plan for student adoption? It's the board's pleasure.
I'll move to adopt the single plans for student achievement for 2010 through 11.
Would that be, are we doing?
We'll modify it at that point.
I'm sorry, what?
Next month we'll modify California and West Gove.
Okay, it's been moved by Mrs. Shoemaker. Is there a second?
Second
by Mrs. Polis to approve the school plan and preliminary budgets for the 2010-2011 school year. All in favor say aye. Oh, you have more questions?
Well, I got a real quick question, just follow up simple, I guess, on yours. If I do want to see that allocation. I think that actually sounds rather interesting in that. If it turns that we decide to make modifications, are these locked in stone or is this?
No.
So we can make modifications at any time? I'm sorry, Mike.
Yeah, go ahead. Ask a question.
We can make modifications at any time.
Not at any time. There are three things that we need to consider. One is, based on this adoption, schools will start spending money July 1. Secondly, when they meet with their advisory councils, they will be presenting the money that the board has approved. And then, based on state revenues and income, we will bring back to the board modifications.
I'd like to add to those figures with the Title I. I'd like to see, and then I want to go back to a prior issue, but I'll come back to that. I'd like to see the number of students that are receiving Title I at each school, not just the percentage, 25, but actual bodies, which we don't have in either one of these presentations, which I thought we would get. Because I'd like to see that those dollars following the actual student. I agree, it should follow the student. So if I can.
Okay. Mrs. Polis?
I didn't have a question. I just had a point of interest. When we were looking at this and we were looking at the free and reduced lunch, it really correlated with the educational background of the parents. And that's another thing that you look at when looking at socially disadvantaged students is the amount of schooling their students had. And if you looked at the two schools that Mr. Spence spoke to, there was, at Vine, 47% of the students qualified for free and reduced lunch,
mm-hmm.
and only 20% of them had graduated with a degree from college, whereas 68% at Vine, 20% graduated with a BA from at Vine, only 11% from the Merced.
Mm-hmm.
So there are other factors that we're looking at, and it really corresponded with their income. So it's great that the money is following the students because we can see
sure
the diversity in their backgrounds and where the support is needed. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that the money is following the students, and I look forward to Mr. Frutos's further explanation, and I appreciate his time today on the phone explaining some of that to me also.
Okay, anybody else? Okay, it's...
Well, my question, well...
Go ahead.
Do we approve, can we approve it without the Title I funding, or does that all have to go in there until we... Because there's still figures and numbers that we want to see, and I don't entirely feel comfortable moving forward with Title I yet until I see those. How do we?
You can postpone this to the next meeting. It just means the schools can't spend the money before they leave. Our principals leave on the 30th of June, which means that if they need to purchase materials, instructional materials for September, they won't be able to do so. This is our third time of trying to explain to the board how this took place just in the last couple of weeks. We've also explained this for the past 2 years in terms of what the principals actually did. And if I thought of a simpler way, there's a lot of regulations and compliance issues that are taken into consideration. But I think we've explained, and which we will show you, that basically principals 2 years ago sat together and said, if we divvied up this money, school improvement and Title I K-12, what would the amounts be? And they looked at that. And then the second part they looked at, well, rather than deal with issues of compliance and deal with programs that better fit elementary versus secondary, which many districts do, they'll decide that Title I just goes to elementary and some other fund goes to the other. They basically saw dollar for dollar that the trade between that was an equal trade. And so the decision was made that was approved by the board 2 years in a row to look at those different funding sources. Now, when you say, I want to see the number of students, we have free and reduced counts that we can show for each school and say, based on these free and reduced counts, this is the base money that follows the kids. Then if I give up my SI money, this is the additional money I get at the elementary, and this is the money that goes to secondary, and it equals out. So I don't believe that you're going to see any surprising information or facts that the board has not already been given. In addition to that, I would say that for every program that you look at in the district, there's a compliance surrounding it. So what Mr. Frutos talked about was that in some schools, such as a charter school, their school improvement becomes a block grant that can't be traded off. Right? Mm-hmm. So therefore, that's taken into consideration. Okay? Where if you look at the poverty level of students and free and reduced in the district, you will see West Cove as the number one school with what percentage?
78%.
78%. Yeah, 78.
Okay? Then you look at Vine with 40%.
Seven.
Okay.
47.
Yeah, 47%. And so there isn't any magic to how this is done. It's basically for program purposes and to instruct students, the money follows the child. The board could decide, let's not do money follows child. Let's have schools qualify. And then any school under 50% poverty level would not get a dime for students who are Title I students. So there's two ways that Ruben explained money follows children, right? Or the district can distribute money. You can distribute money based on a school's poverty level or have the money follow the child. We have always selected, we believe that those students, regardless of the school they attend, require supplemental assistance, and that's why we have the philosophy that the money should follow the child. But I do not think that you're going to see anything different whether we show this to you next week or the following week. It will be the same. I'm happy to do that. Ruben had the charts. Let me give you an example of something else that you have to keep in mind, that we have about 1,000 homeless students in the district. And those homeless students require, as part of Title I monies, that they receive extra support. And so the district provides extra support for some of our homeless students. So there are a lot of rules that govern where monies go. Mm-hmm. And basically, we have been under the same sort of allocation for the past few years. So we can give you the number of counts. I don't know, Tammy, where were you seeing that? In the single plan? The poverty level?
Yes.
Well, the poverty level, yeah.
On page 5 on all of them.
All of them. It's on all of them, yeah. That's where I got to do the division stuff, yeah.
The question I had is you had brought up 2 schools.
Actually, no, that's not true. I brought up all schools because all schools didn't have equal funding.
The examples you used was Merced and Vine.
Correct.
Did you choose those because the principals had difficulty with those 2 schools? Or were they just arbitrary ones that you chose?
Well, they had the greatest disparity. Vine was the lowest when I did the division numbers, and Merced was the highest.
And my second question was...
And that was explained, right? You understood the explanation for that.
Well, I understand some of the things... let me put it this way. I mean, I voted against this when we first brought it up because of the disparity in the funding issue. And so... You know, when you say, do you understand, you know, do I necessarily sign off on what I've been told here tonight? That may be different than understanding what...
No, I was really asking about Cammie's follow-up question is that you understand...
Well, she asked me why I picked those 2 schools.
Yeah.
And I picked those 2 schools because they had the biggest disparity in funding per pupil on the Title I budgets here based on their population. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the answer to that was that based on the school improvement money that they would have gotten and given
supposedly
up,
it equals out.
And the number of students. Our schools are not, they do not consist of the same number of students. Our schools
no, right,
not,
yeah, they don't.
Our schools do not consist of the same number of free and reduced.
Absolutely.
Our schools do not consist of the same homeless.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Our schools do not consist of the same education level for their
Agreed.
Parents. All of those things are taken into consideration. So when you
well, that's
schools,
different. That's different than money following the child, though, based on them generating the funds as a free and reduced lunch person. What you just said, I understand that there's differences between every school and everybody. But my point is that this money is generated by the student who qualifies for free and reduced lunch. You know, that's my point. And it doesn't matter. You know, the education level of their parents doesn't go into account on that funding level given to us by the federal government. You know, they don't go through every kid and say, oh, your parents graduated from college or you're immigrants, whatever. They don't do that. They give you a set amount of money based on that child that qualifies.
They actually do that, Mr. Spence, when they do it for schools.
But we're not doing it for schools.
If this board chose
to do it for schools, but we don't do it for schools.
The board would say, we want to cut off any school at this poverty level and we think these kids at these schools deserve more money.
Right, but
okay.
We don't do that.
We don't do that. But when you're talking about what the student generates, it differs. There's a difference between the number of free and reduced at a school.
Right.
And, therefore, they don't all generate the same amounts. Secondly, how much money they would have given up based on their population of school improvement will also differ in that number you're looking at.
Yeah, that's the numbers that we're going to get from Mr.
Yes.
Frutos.
Yes.
I understand that.
Okay.
Mr. Spence?
Mm-hmm.
The other question I had, I suppose it's for you, Lily, did any of the principals, were they unhappy with this distribution? Because you said you got together, you all discussed it at, a principals meeting, mm-hmm. and were they okay?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It just makes their ability to follow the program, implement a more focused approach to one program that, rather than a little bit of money in different pots that give them compliance issues in, you know, five different pots. When they looked at the numbers and the trade-offs, they were equal, and they were satisfied with the fact that they could better serve students through those programs.
Okay. Any more? Anybody else have any more? Okay, there is a motion on the floor. Is there any more discussion?
Well, I do have one question.
Yes.
And hopefully this will clarify things. When we're talking about Title I, each school gets $126 per student. So at a school like Merced, the reason they have more is because we basically exchanged names for what the money is. So their school improvement funds are still technically there, which is why they have 270 students. It's just called Title I funds.
Correct.
So each school is getting what they would be getting, except for San Jose Edison and Vine, who, because the other schools are willing to split the Title I funds, are getting the funding for their students. So a school like Vine, who would not get school improvement funds, only gets $109, because I'm assuming there's some district cost to fund Title I and run it.
Yes, correct.
And so $17 is the cost of the district per student to administer Title I.
Yes.
Okay. So again, under Title I in our school district, the money is following the students.
Correct.
Okay.
How much does it cost to administer Title I, did you say, per student?
$17 is what Ms. Okay. Shoemaker said.
Did you say 107?
No.
I just subtracted the 126 from the 109.
I had another question.
No, I thought it was 25%. You took 9% off the top, and then there were 17% that you took off that went to various training and materials that didn't necessarily go to that individual school.
Part of that is all the indirect costs.
Is that right? So that's 25%.
That's no, it's not 25%.
Well, it's 9 and 17.
91. Is that what's here?
Is that 26?
This is from last week's presentation.
Yeah, it was 9% from the administration, and then it was 9.27 for indirect and support costs, and then 16.91 was taken off before the direct to schools. That was my question from 9 days ago about what schools that money goes to, the professional development instructional materials at schools. But that doesn't necessarily go directly to the schools. So 25% comes off.
9%
before the money goes directly to the school.
9% comes off the top for the homeless population. So you have to also include all of the numbers, okay? See, if you ask a simplistic question, subtract this number from this number, Ms. Shoemaker's right. If you want to know how much of the money goes to a student that's homeless versus a student that's not homeless, we give you another answer. If it's based on a school that has this many, we're going to give you another answer. These are very strict compliance issues that you're asking about, but the premise for the money going out, whether it's direct or indirect, the district's amount is what is it, Ruben? Correct.
In alignment with the rest of the categorical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 9%.
60% covers, if I remember correctly, professional development. And
correct.
Yeah, it said 17 something, yeah.
Correct.
The chart.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
26%.
And within the pie chart, there were three categories. One was homeless and whatever, 90%, if I remember correctly.
Yes, correct.
Was on.
Correct. But her question was different than Mr. Spence's.
Mm-hmm.
Her question was different. So yeah. You both got a correct answer. It's just a different.
Right.
Because you're calling indirect money that actually is given directly to homeless students.
No, the 9% that goes to indirect and support, there was nothing listed on there as being for homeless students.
No, you have to separate out what does go and what goes in terms of material.
Yeah, but the 9%, as you just said, is consistent with all categorical programs on what we take off the top.
No, that's not correct.
That's not correct. That's what he just said.
No, that's not what he said.
The point of my statement was, once again, $126 of Title I funds follow each student in our school district at each of the schools.
Correct.
If we do anything else, Edison, and Vine and their students who qualify for Title I will not get the $125 per student because they do not qualify. So looking at strictly Title I funds, each one of our schools that are receiving Title I monies are getting them in the same amount.
Correct.
I have two questions.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I always forget that I have to look to you first. Okay, so the 9.2% from last, help me here, 9.2% from last week's and this, the 9% on homeless, are those two separate fees? Are you trying to, is what I'm understanding today that those are the same? Because that wasn't indicated here, but then we got this that said homeless at 9%. So I assume an additional fee.
That's the wrong assumption.
Okay, so. Okay, I'm working.
So you're saying the 9% for indirect and support
is
for homeless kids?
Included in that percentage, there is money that goes to homeless students.
So then the let me ask another question. The $126.92 is directly what comes from the federal government, correct?
I'll let Ruben answer.
Right? That's directly what comes. I know that you had to come up with the average, but that's before you take out for homeless and before you take out for professional development instruction. Before you take out any of that, we're dealing with the 125, which, oh. That is not a problem. Well, they're actually two. which, I mean, it's only just off. That's 126.92, and then mm-hmm. the one you just sent us was 125.
And the only difference is that it's two different years.
Okay.
It's just an updated amount. The 125, if that's the clarification, the 125 or 126 is the same amount. This was distributed to all the schools as a base.
Okay, so this
one's sorry. It's just it changes. You know, every time we calculate it based on the allocation. Right now we're estimating a little bit higher, but it could change within the next few months if the feds give us a different.
Yeah.
Then the other question that I, because I know that you all know far more and I'm just learning, is when I started researching Title I on the internet, it said that in order to be eligible, your school had to be at 40% poverty based on free or reduced lunch or higher, and I was a little confused because all of our schools are actually above 40%. So I went directly to the Department of Education's website and said, okay, I need to learn because I need to be better schooled in this.
Okay, so they we're going to need a tutorial session because, frankly, it's school-wide versus, you know, what you're looking at. School-wide poverty,
mm-hmm.
okay? So there are differences in the way the internet is explaining it to you. So we're just really going to need some time to go over that so that you can see the difference between a school and a school-wide poverty level.
Okay. Thank you. Because, like I said, I looked and thought, well, then all of our schools qualify because
no.
they're all above 40%.
No, actually, every year that I've been here, we've been requesting a waiver for two of our schools to receive Title I monies,
mm-hmm.
San Jose Edison Academy and Vine Elementary School.
Any other questions?
Just one quick question.
Yeah, Mrs. Polis?
If it doesn't pass tonight, will the schools not get the materials they need?
The principals are working until June 30th. We've asked them to spend the money based on their needs, based on what we've allocated to them since March and April of this year, based on projections. They anticipate, after tonight, being able to move forward to buy their students who need the supplemental materials, these materials. In addition, the school district has to buy materials. When we buy in bulk, they get a better rate than when they don't.
Okay, anything else?
Yeah,
okay. It's been moved and seconded. Moved by Ms. Shoemaker and seconded by Mrs. Polis to approve the school plans and preliminary budgets for the 2010-2011 school year. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No. It is approved 3-2. And I had a request for a 5-minute break.
Thank you.